भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Canto 8, Chapter 19, Text 13. Vairanu Banda Etavan Amrityo Eha Dehinam Ajnana Prabhavo Manyur Aham Mano Pabrahit Aham Mano Prabrahmhita Vairanu Banda Etavan Amrityo Iha Dehinam Jnana Prabhavo Manyur Aham Mano Prabrahmhita Vairanu Banda Etavan Amrityo Iha Dehinam Ajnana Prabhavo Manyur Aham Mano Prabrahmhita. Let's chant. Vaishnavis, please. word by word, synonyms. Vaira anubandha. Enmity. Etavan. So great. Amrityoho. Up to the point of death. Iha. In this. Dehinam. Of persons too involved in the bodily concept of life. Agyana prabhavaha. Because of the great influence of ignorance. Manyuhu. Anger. Aham mana. By egotism. Upabrimhitaha. Expanded. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. Hiranyakashipu's anger against Lord Vishnu persisted until his death. Other people in the bodily concept of life maintain anger only because of false ego and the great influence of ignorance. Please repeat. Before you do, just let me set the scene so that for those who may not have been here for a few days, what we have here is Vamanadeva, who's a complete full Vishnu Tattva incarnation of the Supreme Lord. He has entered an arena where there is a sacrifice going on, and he's entered in such a way that he is literally blazing with or radiating light all around him. He's a dwarf, he's diminutive, he's a youth, and he's dressed up as a brahmachari. He has a deer skin and he carries a staff and also a water pot. So he enters and everything stops because they can't help but be stunned, amazed, and surprised at this incredibly beautiful and stunning looking person coming towards them. And so Bali Maharaj, who is the king, he recognizes him, and something inside tells him that this is a very great, illustrious personality. He does not know at this time that he is the Supreme Lord. He just thinks that he's some very great Brahmin sage, and therefore he wants to show all respect and all etiquette towards him. So the first thing that he does is that, in fact, everybody stands up and then everybody bows down, which is the etiquette. And then Bali Maharaj gave him a seat. And then after he gave him a seat, he then took a basin of water and he washed his feet. And in washing after he washed the feet, he poured the wash water over his head, which was highly transcendental. To get the water that washes the feet of God is a very transformative effect. And it actually did have a very big effect. Up until this time, Bali Maharaj was just known as a very great king, an illustrious king, an extremely powerful king. But as far as his spiritual qualities went, they were not really awakened. They were in a dormant form. Now this water which touches his head, we will see how it begins to awaken more and more of his spiritual life and how qualities begin to come to the surface which up to then had not been done. And how this particular incident brings him eventually to the point of being what we call a Mahajan, or a great authority, a great knower of Bhakti Yoga. So that's why this taking the water on his head is a very, very important point. After that, he then says, it looks like you've come here to obtain something, to gain something. What is it that you would like? Whatever you want, I can give you villages. I can give you wives if you want. I can give you cows. I can give you land. I can give you gold, I can give you silver, I can give you jewels, you name it and you've got it. Just say the word. This is his mentality of wanting to give. And this is another interesting point, because when one becomes overwhelmed with spiritual feelings, one of the most immediate effects is that you want to give things. Krishna is giving, giving, giving. That's why we're sitting here. This is a result of Krishna's giving through our most wonderful master, Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada is the via media or the instrument by which Krishna is giving us his love and his knowledge and his understandings. So this is a very, very important point. And the more actually spiritual we feel, truly spiritual, the more we want to give, we want to donate, we want to help, we want to benefit others. It's an automatic automatic is to the position. The Lord himself lives in our hearts as the super soul because he wants to help us. He wants to give to us. Give what? Give his spiritual guidance and knowledge and direction so that we cannot stay trapped in the material world and all of its miseries. So that we can return whence we came to the eternal world. So there he is, always giving, giving. Some of us are resisting, some of us are ignoring, and some of us are absorbing. The result being that some of us will go back home, back to Godhead, and others who couldn't care less, they will stay here and go around and around and around the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. So that is the scene that we presently have here. Now, Vamanadeva has begun to talk about the forebears of Bali Maharaj. As we know, his father was Virochana, and Virochana's father was Prahlad Maharaj, and Prahlad Maharaj's father was Hiranyakashipu. So now he has been talking, and the brother of Hiranyakashipu was Hiranyaksha. So now we have Vamanadeva sort of glorifying the family of Bali Maharaj. So he states over here in the translation, Hiranyakashipu's anger against Lord Vishnu persisted until his death. Other people in the bodily concept of life maintain anger only because of false ego and the great influence of ignorance. So please repeat, Hiranyakashipu's anger against Lord Vishnu persisted until his death. Other people, in the bodily concept of life, maintain anger only because of false ego and the great influence of ignorance. For those who may be new, the word false ego means ego is simply the sense of true self. And false ego is the identification of the self, the soul, with the physical body. So when one, instead of knowing he is an eternal soul, he forgets that. He goes into a state of amnesia and thinks, due to the fact that the soul is in the body, it identifies itself with the body and then begins to think it is the body, and not only the body, but the mind and also the intelligence, and all extensions of the body, such as the parents, such as one's possessions, such like cars and houses and things of this sort. So false ego is the false idea of who we are. And real ego is the true idea of who we are. Okay? So now, the purport of Srila Prabhupada here is, generally speaking, even though the conditioned soul is angry, his anger is not perpetual, but temporary. Could last a few hours, could last even a few days. But it is due to the influence of ignorance. Hiranyakashipu, however, maintained his enmity and his anger against Lord Vishnu until the point of death. In other words, he never stopped hating Lord Vishnu. He never forgot his vengeful attitude toward Vishnu for having killed his brother Hiranyaksha. Others in the bodily concept of life are angry at their enemies, but not as Lord Vishnu... are angry at their enemies, but not at Lord Vishnu. Hiranyakashipu, however, was everlastingly angry. He was angry not only because of false prestige, but also because of continuous enmity toward Vishnu. Oma gyana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmalitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. So here we have Hiranyakashipu being described as being terribly, viciously angry He has an anger which is so hot, which is so strong and so intense that he cannot let it go for even a second. And what makes his anger even stronger is the very fact that his little five-year-old son, Prahlad Maharaj, loves his enemy, the enemy named Vishnu. Now, why is he his enemy? Well, as it's mentioned in the previous text, that his brother was known as Hiranyaksha. Hiranyaksha was a very, very powerful demon, so powerful that he literally terrorized the entire earth, and then went one step further and gathered up all the gold of the earth, actually stole it, creating an imbalance in the earth itself and causing the earth to go off its orbit and fall down into the Garbhodak ocean where it lay there at the bottom. He didn't care about how many people would die or how many people would be killed or anything like that. His only concern is get the gold and just use it for whatever sense pleasure he would want to use it for, whether it was to build castles or palaces in gold, or whether it was to build rooms of gold, columns of gold. Gold, of course, as we know, is the most valuable of all metals. And so that was a sign of course, great prestige to have all that gold. So the earth was lying at the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean, and the demigods, began to pray to the Lord that the earth should be rescued, and they prayed and prayed, and finally the Lord appeared as Lord Varaha in the form of a boar with tusks, and which would equip him to be able to dive down deep into the ocean and put the earth on the tusks. This was no ordinary boar, by the way. This was a gigantic, inconceivably large, gigantic boar that could carry the entire earth on its tusks, raise it to the surface, and then set it back in motion into orbit. So Lord Varaha, as I said, he appeared. He appeared for no other purpose than to destroy this Varaha and to recover the earth. As Krishna himself says, whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise in irreligion, at that time I descend myself. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, at that time I descend to this world. So he came to this world to relieve the world, actually, of this very, very horrible, menacing personality known as Hiranyaksha. And Hiranyaksha, as I said, was extremely powerful, very, very powerful, but not so powerful that he couldn't that he could defeat the Lord. The Lord had a really big tussle with him. They fought and fought in the air, on the water, and the fight went on for quite a while. And actually, the Lord could have killed him immediately, but one of the reasons that Hiranyaksha came into this world along with his brother Hiranyakashipu is that they originally were in the eternal world, the spiritual world, and they were known as Jai and Vijay. And there was some altercation between them and the four Kumaras, the result being that they were cursed. But ultimately, it's really not a curse because it was a blessing. And the blessing is that they would get the opportunity, although not as friends, as enemies, to fight with the Lord. That is actually quite a blessing. To have the Lord put his arms around you, push you, pull you, and all of this. This, again, is getting the vibration of pure spirit penetrating the being of, in this case, as I said, Jai or Vijay. So Jai and Vijay were Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. And that is one of the reasons, there are others, but one of the reasons the Lord does like to incarnate is that he likes to wrestle. He likes to sport. And who better to sport with than his devotees? That's actually a privilege. It's an opportunity and a pleasure. So who would be worthy to sport with the Lord? Who would be worthy of touching the Lord and seeing the Lord and being in such an embrace of the Lord but his devotee? So what he did is, as I said, the curse was the curse was caused by the four Kumaras, and the two doorkeepers, Jai and Vijay, they came down to the earth as very great, powerful demons. And so what happened was that finally Viraha killed Hiranyaksha. Does anybody remember the way he killed him? It's very simple. Yes, Bhrigupati? What? You got to hear it. You got to hear it. Yes, he slapped him on the ear. Very simply, and not even heavily. Actually, the Lord could have killed him just by blinking his eyes if he wanted to. But he wanted to sport. He wanted to play. He wanted to have a little fun. And so his devotee was actually giving him pleasure. It's a very interesting contradictions here. Because on the one hand, the devotee is playing the part of the enemy. And actually, I say playing the part, he actually thinks that Varaha is his enemy. He's really not. He's his friend. But what's happening is that as a result of giving him a fight, the Lord, who has this fighting instinct, who has this pleasure that he gets from wrestling, is getting the pleasure of the fight. And the same thing which happened with Hiranyakashipu. There was a big fight there, and the Lord fought with him and fought, and this again gave the Lord a tremendous amount of pleasure through the fighting. Sometimes people wonder, well, why would the Lord want to fight? It's sport, it's not hatred. This is something that is very common to men, less so to women. Although nowadays, with women's liberation, they also fight a bit. So, but the fighting is peculiar, you know, to men. They get into fights. Even you see little children, little boys. They see a girl. She has a toy. They immediately snatch it away from her, and then the girl tries to get it back, and he pushes her on the floor, and she goes crying to her mother. This is a very common characteristics of little children, boys. They want to show their, you know, their strength, their power, their bigness, their greatness. And so mother comes over, don't you ever do that. And so he says, yeah. And then he does it again. Because that's his nature until he grows up to become more cultured, more refined, more controlled. And he knows that he's going to get a slap on the wrist, or he'll get denied his ice cream, or any of the things that he loves and likes if he acts in a way which is rather barbaric or brutal or heavy, either to girls or boys. So here's what happens is that when Hiranyaksha was killed, right after that, if we all remember, all of the relatives of Hiranyaksha, they were all mourning. They were all very, very sad, sorrowful. And Hiranyakashipu got up in front of the family. It was kind of like a big family reunion there. And he begins to expound the philosophy of the Vedas. Now that's very interesting because here he speaks perfect Vedic knowledge. He says, tells everybody, there is no reason for us mourning and lamenting because after all, the body will not be here forever. It's born, it grows, it's maintained for a certain amount of time, it produces byproducts, it then diminishes, and then it begins to, it then finally dies. So what is this to mourn over? This is going on all the time. And he says, besides, the soul cannot be killed. The soul of Hiranyaksha, it is forever. Never was there a time when, as Krishna says, I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor this future shall any of us cease to be. So he's talking like that, as if he were Krishna, telling his family all this great philosophy that you have really nothing to worry about. Rather, we should wish him well in his journey, and we need not really mourn him. Sure, we can mourn for a few days, appreciating the wonderful deeds, wonderful in their mind, deeds that he performed, and the pleasures that he gave us, but after all, we all have to go sometime. So that's very nice on paper, and it reads very well. But when it comes down to, or push comes to shove, what happens? He can't apply it one bit, one fraction. He talks about, you know, that the soul is forever, and yet he harbors this incredible degree, this very fiery degree of vengeance against Lord Vishnu, who killed his brother. Why is that? Why should he harbor so much after he knows his philosophy? The reason is that he is very much attached to his own body. He loves his body because that body that he has it's insuperable. It's most powerful. It's more powerful than anyone and anything in the world. Next to, of course, Lord Vishnu. Of course, nobody is as powerful as him. But it's Lord Brahma even. But he's very proud of that body. He feels very great about the body. And he loves this body. Now, being identified with the body, thinking that he is the body, and why wouldn't he? Because the body gives him a sense of superiority, a sense of greatness, a sense of bigness, that he's better, higher, greater than everybody else. So, therefore, he's in love with his own body. And isn't it the fact that Hiranyaksha, who's his brother, is an extension of his own body? They were born as twins. So Hiranyaksha, his brother, was killed by Lord Vishnu. In effect, it feels like a part of Hiranyakashipu has been chopped off. Because when we identify ourselves with our body, we identify ourselves with all the connections and extensions of the body. My mother, my father, my brother, my sister, my grandparents, my friends, these are all extensions of me. And if anything happens to them, I feel some sadness or some sorrow because I feel that they are a part of me. So feeling that they're a part of me, I would, of course, become very angry or I would become very sad or sorrowful depending upon how they died. So in this case, brother was killed through a fair fight, and Hiranyakashipu, of course, was very, very upset because a part of him is missing. I mean, think about it. If somebody cuts off your finger, you become upset because you're missing a finger now, or you're missing a hand because we're identifying ourselves as this is me. So he feels that that part of him, this Hiranyaksha, part of him is gone. Well, how would you feel if a part of you is missing? Actually, this is why we grieve when some of our close, dear ones leave. Because we feel that some part of us is missing, and as a result of that part of us missing, we feel incomplete. And feeling incomplete, we don't feel that we can really be as happy as we once were before with that person. So that creates, in this particular situation, tremendous anger. Because you've denied me the right to have the happiness that I had before of associating with my brother, going out and on hunts with my brother, going out and killing with my brother, going out and fighting, all this, now I don't have it anymore. That's why he had so much vengeance and hostility towards Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu denied him the opportunity to continue with the pleasure of having his brother present. And not only that, but brother meant an increase of false prestige. True, Hiranyakashipu was so powerful. But with the brother, the power is doubled. And people look up to the family as, wow, what a combination. So much power between those two. I mean, people cringe. People were fearful because they were so fearsome. So that's also more prestige lost. The brother is gone. So some of the power of the family is gone. Whenever we become eclipsed, whenever we become reduced, whenever we become smaller, that means that our power, our sense of greatness, our sense of glory has been reduced. And we are in this world in order to be great, to be big, to be powerful, to be amazing. So therefore, he felt eclipsed, he felt reduced, and consequently made to feel inferior. This inferior to what he was when he had his brother. Therefore, his vengeance just grew hotter and hotter. Now, here's the picture. His son, Prahlad Maharaj, tells his father, when his father asks him, what is the best thing you have learned in the Gurukul? His son tells him, the best thing I've learned is that you should worship Lord Vishnu. You should hear about Lord Vishnu. You should remember Lord Vishnu. You serve the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. You should worship Lord Vishnu, offer prayers to Lord Vishnu. I mean, you can just see Hiranyakashipu as he's hearing this. I mean, just to literally want to kill that kid, because here he is praising the enemy, glorifying the enemy, applauding the enemy, and telling him to worship the very person whom he hates. Think about that. It's heavy duty, really. So he goes on worshiping the Lord and offering prayers to the Lord, doing practical service to Lord Vishnu, and also give up your body, give up your mind, give up your words, give up everything for the pleasure of God. What? He just wanted to kill him. And did he not try to? Well, first thing he does is he calls his servants who had the tridents, and he says, pierce them with the trident. As you know, trident, it has these prongs, points at the end of it, these three. So they try to pierce them. But Prahlad Maharaj was a devotee. He learned devotional service when he was in the womb of his mother. And Narada Muni recited the Vedic knowledge to his mother, and he heard it while he was in the womb. And he not only heard it, but he remembered it, and he internalized it, and always kept it with him. So what happened was that he was a devotee of the Lord. He was always chanting the Lord's name. He was always remembering Krishna. He was glorifying the Lord. And not only that, but because he felt such ecstasy and joy and happiness and fulfillment, he wanted to share the Lord that he felt in his heart with all his students. They were all 5-6-year-old boys. Normally those boys, they like to play ball, they like to tackle each other, they like to throw each other on the ground and things like that. That's what boys do. So, but he said, this is a waste of time. You can die at any moment. And if you die at any moment, what will happen? You'll just come back and do the same thing again, and you'll be miserable just as your parents are miserable. You hear them arguing with one another. You're this and you're that, and you should have done this and you should have done. Now, we can rise above all that, and we can go back to the eternal world. This is how he preaches to his sons, his playmates. And he's so convincing, he's so persuasive, that they actually come to believe that. And this, of course, worries the teachers, and it worries, of course, the father, Hiranyakashipu. So he tries different ways. He throws the boy off a mountain. Can you imagine? But the mountain, just like a woman taking her son to her breast and hugging the mountain, doesn't in any way create any broken bones whatsoever. It's like falling into a cushion. Then he also has him thrown under elephants, hoofs, nothing. Try to drown him, nothing. Try to put him in a snake pit with cobras, nothing. Nothing could kill the child because he was protected by Lord Vishnu. When you are protected by Lord Vishnu, what happens is that nobody can harm, nobody can hurt you, nobody can in any way actually disturb us. And that's because Lord Vishnu gives us the tranquility, the peace, the strength, and the resistance to take all of this. And Prahlad was never praying that he should be saved. He simply prayed, please, please, forgive all these persons who are my father, who is in such ignorance. Because he really doesn't know what he's doing, and he's so egotistical, he's so much of an egomaniac, he needs therapy. Good, he didn't use that word, but... in effect, that's what he was saying. So the point of all of this is that is that Prahlad Maharaj, of course, was protected, and he was protected by the Supreme Lord, and Hiranyakashipu could not in any way endanger him. He couldn't hurt him. He couldn't offend him. And this is what we all have to learn from this, because by internalizing this philosophy and making it our own and applying it, not just reading it, not just knowing it, but because Hiranyakashipu, he knew it, but he could not apply it. And does anybody know why he was unable to apply it? You can only apply this when you get the grace of Krishna. It's not enough to just understand it with the intelligence. Applying it means being able to be unaffected, undisturbed, unruffled, unshaken by the taunts and and the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune when they come to us. They don't bother us. They don't disturb us. They don't shake us, because we're soul conscious of who we are rather than body conscious thinking that's who we are. As long as there is a sense of that I'm the body, then I feel that this is me, and I want this me to continue going and going and improving or being benefited. As long as that exists, then if anyone threatens my body, my physical body, then I become shaken, I become frightened. Because the body is the means by which I obtain false prestige. The body is the means by which I lord it over this material world. The body is the means by which I can be glorified and honored. So if anyone threatens the body, anyone in any way tries to hinder my body or frustrate my body, the result of that will be is I want to kill him. Because he's going to prevent me from being a lord in this world. And that's my motivation. To be important, to be big, to be glorious, to be wonderful. If somebody tries to stop that, well then, what do? I have to kill him. And that's why he tried to kill his son. So that's the important point here, is that it is imperative, it's absolutely essential that we take these processes that we have been given, these nine forms of devotional service, with a special emphasis on the first two of hearing and chanting. And that the Lord has, in His own name, incarnated Himself, so that we can, when we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, we can associate with the Supreme Lord. We can contact the Lord. We can feel the presence of the Lord. And as we all become more and more advanced, we can actually feel the ecstasy of that contact. As we know, Krishna is all bliss. Krishna is all peace. Krishna is all knowledge. Krishna is the controller. Krishna is the most beautiful, the most wealthy, the most powerful, the most knowledgeable. He is all this. And that which we are associating with when we chant God's holy name, it comes to us. In other words, His virtues, His qualities, His goodness, His kindness, His patience, His perseverance, His affection, His steadiness, His resistance to evil, all that comes to us as a result of chanting with intensity, and chanting with love, chanting with gratitude that Krishna has been so kind to give us this mercy to be able to associate with Him. This is what Lord Chaitanya says in the Shikshastika, that Krishna is so kind to allow us to associate with Him through His holy name. And as we all become more and more advanced, purer in heart, more appreciative of what the Lord has given us, more gifts come to us. And one of those gifts, as I said, is that we actually feel the holy presence of the Lord. And as Srila Prabhupada so often said, he not only feels the presence of the Lord, but he sees Krishna here, there, everywhere, wherever he looks. So seeing the Lord, feeling the Lord, sensing the Lord, and feeling the embrace, so to speak, of the Lord, what could be greater, what could be better than that? Because that's a permanent gain. It's not a temporary gain. All these temporary pleasures and accomplishments and achievements that people have in the world, they're there only for a certain amount of time, for the length of the body. When the body dies, all these other things go. And then you come back and you start all over again to go through the round of miseries, birth and death, disease, old age, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. All this goes on and on ad infinitum with lots of miseries punctuated by a little drip of pleasure. It's like the king who would punish a thief or punish a criminal. He would take him, put him in the water and put him underwater, and just about when he was ready to expire, yanked him up, and so the person who was just almost on the verge of suffocating underwater, you go, and this is called pleasure of the material world. Yeah, that's the pleasure. That's the happiness. Relief. Relief is not happiness. Happiness is the connection of the soul with the Supreme Soul. The relationship of that soul with the Supreme Soul. And when the Supreme Soul literally, truly, exerts his love or expresses his love to the soul, and the soul feels that love in the form of transcendental bliss, transcendental peace, transcendental knowledge. That is security. People all over are looking for security. But there's no security, because everything in the world will be destroyed. Nothing lasts. And as a result of that, there's always anxiety. If there's anxiety,
then where is the security? There's always stress that things will not be done as we want them to be done when we want them. So there's this stress of getting something done at the proper time. So these stresses and strains of material life can all be overcome with this wonderful process that Srila Prabhupada has so mercifully brought us, and that is Krishna consciousness. Our goal, our focus has to be on developing more and more and more love for the Lord, more and more appreciation for Krishna, more and more gratitude for Krishna, more and more of an eagerness to try to do even better quality of service for the Lord, to be obedient to the superiors, to the persons who are in charge of the Lord's activities here. We have different people in positions, and so those positions should be respected, the authority should be respected, and when we cooperate in a mood of cooperation, then we are truly acting according to the will of the Lord, assuming that the authority is acting in accordance with the rules and laws of the Lord. If that is in place, then obedience is a wonderful quality. And obedience comes humility. Without humility, there cannot be any self-realization. We always have to feel small, tiny, insignificant, worthless next to Krishna and next to his great devotees like Srila Prabhupada. We have to be tiny, like an ant next to him. That's how we should be feeling. And if we feel like an ant, we're rightly situated. And let me say this, that if you feel like an ant, he will raise you to the position of a giant. That's the way it works. Thank you so much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. Are there any, don't go, are there any questions? Yeah, Balaram, should I call him or not? He's becoming an old standby. Yes, give him the microphone and let him shout it out loud and strong. Let's hear it.
Okay. Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your very energetic class as usual.
Thank you.
And what grabs me today's class is the concept of life, a concept, bodily concept. And yesterday in the car, I work in the car business, and you have a personal experience of that. I gave
sure
you a good
do.
Deal. Anyway, yesterday my manager was compassionate over me because of my medical situation. And I told him, actually, that's the nature of the body. That you see that in the showroom, there's a brand new Camry. And there's no driver in that Camry. It is dead. So all our life, you are taught that you're the car.
Yes.
But you're not taught of the driver of the car. And I told him that that's knowledge. That's the completion of knowledge, is to know the driver of the car. And that's you, I told my manager. And that's you. And all your life you're thinking you're Carlos, you're born in the Philippines, you're a manager of Toyota, and all these things. But actually, unfortunately, at the end of life is when you know that you're not these things. Yeah. That you're the driver inside the car. Yeah. And I said, and Carlos, this knowledge, I didn't acquire it. I got it from a book, from a sacred book. And then he said, okay, so I'm going to give you this book on Christmas.
All right.
Because he's interested to know the science of the driver.
Very nice.
So that's the class for those kind of people. But the more advanced devotees, we know that there is the driver, the car, and there's another passenger inside the car, which is, who is Krishna? And it reminds me of my son when he was taking the driving course, and he was very nervous because the DMV driver was right beside him, and I'm thinking how to pacify him. And I just thought, Rama, don't be nervous. The DMV is just there to actually supervise that you are gonna make the right decision in your driving skills. And you're good. You're very good. You're going to make the right turns, the right left turns, the proper way, the stoplight, and everything. You're making the right decision. So that's the Paramatma realization. that actually while you're driving that car, there is Krishna supervising you. Now, this is my question.
Well, wait a minute.
I have a question now.
You talk 5 minutes now. No question.
One question.
Wait one moment. If there's nobody else who has anything to ask, I'll come back to you. Everybody should have a chance to ask. Okay.
But it's related to the realization.
Yeah, no, but you talk for 5 minutes, Prabhu. Give other people a chance to ask their questions.
Another 15 seconds?
No. Are you sure 50? Because you're on the clock.
Yeah. We'll meet in between.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So this is the question.
These are salesmen.
Is there a scriptural injunction that while driving the car, there is Krishna right there and there's another passenger that comes in? The guru. Is there a scriptural? There's a Sanskrit verse with the Goswamis or with Bhaktivinoda Thakur that says that, you know, there's another passenger.
The guru is the via media between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. Guru is the via media. You'll find that in the... just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge into you because he has seen the truth. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never again fall into such illusion, for by this knowledge you will see that all living beings are but part of me, or, in other words, they are mine, Krishna says. So that's the verse from the Bhagavad Gita, that the teacher is absolutely essential, and through the teacher we learn. But as I already said, Hiranyakashipu never got the grace because he never went to Narada Muni and said, teach me. Rather, he would prefer to kill Narada Muni, who taught his son to love his enemy. Okay, Prabhu? Any other questions? Okay, Hare Krishna. Ja.
Or if the authority is willing to do it by